Coming up on golf today, aloha means goodbye. The PGA Tour sunsets the Hawaii Swing and its Kapalua event. What is the future of the Sony, and where will the 2027 season begin? We'll catch up with Camilo Villegas at the Zurich Classic. He was just named assistant captain in the President's Cup. We'll get his thoughts on PGA Tour business and what will it take for the international team to win. Plus, world number one Gino Titicun checks in from the Chevron in Houston in search of her first major. Is this the week it all comes together? Find out next right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hello, it's Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. There are no days off when it comes to the golf world these days, my friend. News every single day.
Yeah, every week brings new news, new potential change. Some of it's existential for some tours. Mm. We're not quite at that level with what the PGA Tour is making clear these days, but fans will notice a difference.
No doubt. Busy, busy time once again. We start today with news from Monday evening, as the PGA Tour has confirmed it will be eliminating the Hawaii Swing. This year's Century, you may recall, was canceled because of severe water restrictions in drought-stricken Maui. The tour season began a week later in mid-January at the Sony Open, but this was also the final year of the company's title sponsorship. The tour added in a statement that it is having conversations about the Sony being part of the PGA Tour champion schedule. Hawaii has been hosting tour events since 1965. This from the PGA Tour on Maui. We are grateful to the plantation course at Kapalua, Kapalua Resort, Maui County, and the state of Hawaii for their longtime support of our season opening PGA Tour event, as well as the fans, partners, and volunteers across Maui who have supported the event throughout the years. The PGA Tour will share more details regarding its 2027 schedule at a later date. The tour said this on the Sony Open in Hawaii: "We can confirm that the PGA Tour is having conversations about the Sony Open in Hawaii becoming a PGA Tour champions event." The PGA Tour will share more details regarding its 2027 schedules at a later date. Joined now by Josh Carpenter of the Sports Business Journal. Josh, how much of this news is part of the tough run of luck on Kapalua, from COVID to fires to water issues, versus this being part of a more revamped PGA Tour schedule?
Yeah, Damon and Eamon, good to see you both. I think it's a mix of both. Like, as you mentioned, Kapalua in that tournament, there's been a lot of kind of tough obstacles and things they've had to work through the last few years. But also, you see the PGA Tour as a for-profit entity now, and kind of their changing business model. I think the cancellation of the 2026 Century was maybe just an easy out for the tour. That seems a little harsh to say, but it was a way for them to say, hey, like, this is a very complicated event to put on. It's a very costly event to put on. And so with them not being able to hold the event this year because of the water issues, it gave them an out to say, all right, we've already had all these issues with this tournament, the complex logistics around it. And we're a for-profit enterprise now, and we can't be losing money at multiple events in Hawaii to start the year. So let's find a way to make some changes and move forward under this new structure.
The news isn't that surprising, Josh, but I'm curious, why now? No. Why so far ahead of the official schedule announcement? Is this really just about letting the local organizers, the local community, know far in advance this isn't going to happen?
I think if anything, Eamon, it's about putting things in motion. They've got to get next year's schedule put together. And I know typically they announce that schedule in August ahead of the next year. But with all these changes that are being expected, the tour has to get ahead of it and start building this thing out earlier than they have in the past. And so if anything, Eamon, I think it's taken a long time. If you noticed, I think the widely held assumption in kind of golf circles in the fall when they announced that they were canceling the Century for this year, at least from what I heard, is that they were not planning on going back to Hawaii. So I think that kind of shows how long this has taken to get in place to make this plan. Now that this is in place, now that they're not playing at Kapalua, now that there are discussions about, you know, as you mentioned, Sony becoming a PGA Tour champions event, we know that next season will begin on the mainland in the U.S. It's not starting in Hawaii. And now that they know that, they can start building out the rest of that 2027 schedule, because up until now, outside of the major championships, outside of the majors, the Amex is the only tournament that we actually know dates for in 2027, when we think they're going to start rolling out some of these changes that might be more fully, you know, complete in 2028 and beyond.
Well, Josh, Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, has said wanting to start with a bang, with impact. Does this lead you to believe that this is going to be a La Quinta start, or a Los Angeles, or San Diego, or Phoenix? Do you have any indication of what that impactful start will be?
Yeah, Damon, there are a number of scenarios kind of at play. I've heard that, you know, they could start next season at the Amex. As we mentioned, you know, they've already got those dates set for late January. Rolapp has said he wants to start the season a little bit later. Another possibility, as we've reported, is that Century, the sponsor of the Kapalua tournament, they're without a tournament now as a title sponsor. And that's a title sponsorship that's locked up through 2035. What we've been reporting, what we think is likely to happen, is for Century to take over the sponsorship of the Torrey Pines event, which had Farmers Insurance as a sponsor up until this year. That's always been early season on the calendar. Damon, it wouldn't surprise me to see Century go and title sponsor that event. And maybe you see that as the first event of the PGA Tour season. So Century kind of keeps that elevated level of their sponsorship. They still have the first event of the season. That wouldn't surprise me. We know that, you know, a while back, I think Pebble Beach was mentioned as a tournament that maybe they'd be part of the FedEx Cup playoffs later in the summer. We know now that AT&T and the folks at Pebble Beach, they want to be on the earlier part of the schedule. So I can see that as a possibility. As we've heard Brian Rolapp say, they want to start at a marquee West Coast venue. That's where they want the schedule to start, the season to start. So yeah, I think any of those three scenarios really is at play at this point.
What does your gut instinct tell you, Josh, in terms of how close 2027 will actually look to the reality? Because it seems that 28, optimistically, is closer to what the tour imagines itself going to be going forward. How close to that can 2027 realistically be in your mind?
I think you might see some small tweaks in 2027, but by and large, I believe 2027 is going to look a lot like 2026. And Eamon, you've reported on this. Like, this is what I was hearing all week at Augusta, is that, hey, it's harder to make these changes. It's not just flipping a switch and making these changes overnight for Brian Rolapp. You know, at the NFL, it might have been a little bit easier, but at the PGA Tour, if you move one tournament, well, that affects TV partners, it affects title sponsors, it affects vendors at the event. It affects so much. It affects the other events on the schedule. And so I think 2027 is going to look pretty similar to 2026. And maybe by 2028, we start seeing some of these bigger changes that the tour has been talking about. But I mean, yeah, a lot of the discussion at Augusta was like, hey, Rolapp came in August and he said, hey, we're going to make big changes. He came out and spoke to the media at the Players Championship about 6 months later and said, hey, we're still planning on making big changes. Here are a few details, but we're not going to give you too much. And now we know he's going to speak at the Travelers Championship. And so I think really the pressure is building a little bit. You know, when he speaks to the media and the public at the Travelers Championship, we better see some big changes, that some of these changes they've been talking about. Let's see what they actually look like.
I mean, to me, this is a big change considering the history at Kapalua, Josh.
For sure.
The champions that have been there, Tiger and Ernie battling, Vijay doing great things, Stuart Appleby. Is this what scarcity looks like? Maybe the beginning of what we'll see in 2028.
It could be. I think also, like, as I mentioned before, like, Hawaii is just an extremely expensive, complex place to host golf tournaments. Some might say, well, okay, they cancel the Century and they just make the Sony Open a champions event. Well, that they would say, okay, well, now you've got two champions event. Putting on a PGA Tour champions event is a lot less complex than it is putting on a signature series PGA Tour event. The build out's much smaller. You have fewer fans on site. You know, all that stuff kind of goes into it. So, yes, this is part of that scarcity, maybe, Damon, but I think it's more about Hawaii is not a money-making, you know, portion of the schedule for them. And they're a for-profit enterprise now, so they got to figure out a way that they can make a return. For the SSG guys, they can make a return on this investment. And TV viewership is something that people always pointed to. I know everyone in golf loves Hawaii. They love the beautiful vistas and the whales and all this stuff in early January when it's really cold on the East Coast. But that also goes up against the NFL playoffs. And I remember myself sitting there watching I think it was on the divisional weekend this past January when there was no Century, and thinking to myself, boy, I love the Century, but I'm not sure how much of it I would have watched because the NFL divisional playoffs were so good. And so you got Brian Rolapp coming from the NFL. I know that's in the back of his head as well.
Do you think on this for-profit topic, Josh, that there's going to be sensitivity from the tour and how certain changes, either this one or going forward, will be perceived, just in terms of where the charitable impact was of these events before they leave town? Because here you have an area that's had its issues and challenges and tragedies over the last few years. It's going to be very easy for the critics to say, well, the tour is just kind of cutting them loose at this point. Do you think that's an angle or a narrative that they're sensitive of as they make these kind of schedule changes?
I think they're sensitive of it, and I think it's been a topic that's been brought up a fair amount. So I do think they're going to try and keep the charities involved as much as they can. That's been a huge part of the PGA Tour over the years. So I think that's part of it. I also think, you know, you've heard Rolapp talk about wanting to hit some of these big markets, and I understand that. But at the same time, look at this past weekend at Hilton Head, right? It's one of the smaller markets on the PGA Tour. It might be the smallest market on the PGA Tour. I haven't done that analysis, but very small market. But what did you see? You saw robust crowds. You saw a great tournament, a playoff finish between Matt Fitzpatrick and Scottie Scheffler. That tournament, even being a smaller market tournament, always seems to deliver. The TV ratings are usually very good around that event. And so I think along with the charities, the tour has to find the right balance of, yes, you want to hit some big markets, but you also have to remember when you hit some of these big markets, there are other games in town. If you go to an LA, if you go to a New York, the PGA Tour being in town doesn't necessarily always move the needle. So they have to find the right balance of hitting some of these bigger markets that I know that they want to hit, like Chicago, like Boston, like New York, but also keeping in some of these smaller markets like RBC and some of the other, you know, with the Heritage and then some of the others that really are, a lot of people think, kind of the lifeblood of the PGA Tour.
This feels like a conversation we're going to have a lot over the next year or two, Josh. Thanks for the time this morning. Appreciate your reporting.
Thanks a lot, guys. Great seeing you both.
All right, folks. Brentley Romine is on site at this week's PGA Tour stop, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. Brentley, nice to see you. What has the reaction been to this news on the ground?
Well, good morning, guys. Rumors became reality late Monday evening, and that's around the time that these players here at the Zurich Classic started hearing about the tour's decision to say aloha to the Hawaiian Swing, in a state that has hosted the PGA Tour since 1965. And while most players I talked to were a bit indifferent, chalking this up to just part of the evolution of the PGA Tour now under CEO Brian Rolapp, I did have a chance to catch up with two guys who not only have strong memories from especially the Sony Open, but two players on the PGA Tour's Player Advisory Council.
Unfortunately, I think that's just kind of, you know, maybe part of, you know, business over years and years of play. Obviously, Sony's a great event. Start the year out in Hawaii is obviously awesome, but, you know, there's always some changes that are going to have to be made, I think, throughout years and years. And, you know, hopefully we can still keep it as either, you know, Champions Tour event or something else that could make it work type of thing, but it stinks to lose it, but I think in the overall scheme of things, I think that's just going to potentially happen over years and years.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I do know the FCC and the work that Brian's trying to do for our season next year and moving forward is in the best interest of us players. I think the difficulties with Maui and then just having a one-off event this year, I don't think it really worked with how they were hoping it would. So it's a bummer. You know, we've been going to Wailea Country Club for, 45 years or something like that. And it's a bummer that the PGA Tour won't be going there. And I did hear that the Champions Tour potentially could be taking over that spot. And, you know, fingers crossed that does come through because, you know, I'd like to, if we lose the course and we lose that tournament on the PGA Tour schedule, I'd still like it to be in the ecosystem, in the family a little bit. And I think it'd be a great place for the seniors to play.
What are some of your fondest memories from playing the Sony? You've played there every year. You've been a pro.
Yeah. No, it's just great. It's the first place I tried Spam. changed a lot of how I eat breakfast. You know, I like to eat rice with my eggs now, and I first started that there. No, it's remember in 2019, my rookie year, my wife and I had just gotten married maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before that trip. So we did our honeymoon, came back, and then 6 days later, we were in Hawaii together. It was like a second honeymoon almost. It's fun stories with caddies there, how fun the golf course is. And always, it's just kind of you gear up in the whole off season to go to Hawaii and look forward to Wailea, and you think about that 18th tee shot, but how for me a huge fade or how I'm going to play it. It's going to be sad that we won't be going back.
Well, breakfast routines aside, Hank did tell me also when he started to hear rumblings back in January, he made sure to grab a few extra mementos for what could be the last Sony Open. And to add on to what Josh was saying earlier in the show, the Super Bowl is on Valentine's Day in 2027. So if the Amex dates are the 21st through the 24th of January, that leaves 2 weeks now between those two events. Obviously, the Waste Management Phoenix Open loves that Super Bowl week. And then there's one fewer week between potentially a WM and the Masters. So if the PGA Tour wants to go big, maybe start with a century at Torrey Pines the week before Amex, that all of a sudden leaves an extra spot for an event that hasn't been part of that time of the year on the calendar. So I think these players and all of us will wait to see what the PGA Tour officially announces in the coming weeks and months. But I think right now the sentiment is shared among all that they'll go where the points are, they'll go where the money is, and they'll go where the competition is. Guys.
Brentley Romine reporting from the Zurich Classic of New Orleans on this latest news involving the PGA Tour. I'm of two minds. I'm saddened as someone who has been to Kapalua and knows of the economic impact of that tournament through the years. Some $747,000 raised for charities in 2025, tens of millions of dollars annually through the visitors that the tournament would attract, the tough years that that region has had with COVID, with the wildfires, and with these drought conditions. But this is a new era of PGA Tour business, and I think the loss of the Hawaii swing is a reflection of that reality.
And I think that's a reflection of how a lot of golf fans will process it. There are several buckets I think the reaction will fall into, which is the cadence, charity, and the courses. Fans are familiar with the start to the season in Hawaii. It's something I think when you're trapped in the cold Northeast, it's certainly something you enjoy watching. There's also, as you mentioned, the charitable impact of it. There are also two of the more interesting golf courses on the PGA Tour in Wailea Country Club and the Plantation Course at Kapalua. But the reality, which Josh Carpenter touched on earlier, is there is a tremendous cost as well. And I know that's not a sexy factor in all of this, but it's a relevant factor, certainly in a business that's now gone into a for-profit model.
Right.
The cost of putting on these events in Hawaii. And the reality is, as much as we all enjoyed it, they were watched by three men and a dog. There just was no buzz. There was no impact at those events. So if you do want to start your season with a bang and you want to really make a statement to start a PGA Tour season, then neither Kapalua nor Honolulu were the two places you're actually going to do that effectively. So the question is now, what's the second half of the tour strategy in this moving forward? We may not see what the new reality looks like in 27, but now Brian Rolapp and his team are under something of an obligation to say, OK, well, this isn't going to work for us. Hawaii is not the answer. Well, what is the answer? And we're obviously some time away from getting that, but let's see what the actual alternative to that is.
Through my lifetime, Kapalua has had moments where it thought it was going to go away even years ago. I'd say decades ago. There was a time when Tiger would go and Ernie and Phil and Vijay, and it was this robust kickoff to a new year. And then the best players in the world started to turn away. Tiger wouldn't want to go. Rory maybe didn't want to start his year in Kapalua. I thought it was saved by the fact that the Jordan Spieths and Justin Thomases and Hideki Matsuyamas and Xander Schauffeles and John Rahm, back when he was on the PGA Tour, loved to go. But there have been moments where it seemed like this was a tournament that was going to go away, whether it was the logistics or the fact that maybe it wasn't drawing in the viewers with a competitive sports landscape with the NFL. In some ways, the writing was on the wall, and I feel like last year or this past year kind of gave them an out to kind of more smoothly move away from this destination.
Yeah, it was not an appointment in the calendars for the best players in the world anymore. It wasn't something that they felt as though they had to be there for. I think Rory McIlroy's only played that tournament once in all of his years on the PGA Tour. And the reality is that you see fields in, for instance, Dubai, on the DP World Tour usually in that same period in January that are as robust, in, certainly in terms of big names, as you would find that ever actually showed up at Century in Kapalua the last few years. The sponsors, obviously, there is locked up for another 9 years with Century. Hopefully they'll find the venue and the field that's worthy of them. I don't think it had been delivered over the last few years because of logistics and competition from other tours and other venues over the last decade or so. But maybe we're also moving to the point where, yes, the PGA Tour schedule gets a little bit later into the year before it kicks off, but that may also go in concert with the idea of having a more global presence in Q4 and into Q1 around the world, either with the DP World Tour or playing a little bit farther afield.
The times, my friend, they are changing.
That they are. We've got more news on this Tuesday as well. Camilo Villegas, he already has a couple of jobs as a PGA Tour player and a director on the Tour's board. As of today, he's adding another. More on that when we come back.
We're back on Golf Today. International team captain Jeff Ogilvie announced today that Camilo Villegas will return as a captain's assistant for the 2026 President's Cup, which will be played at Medina in September of this year. Camilo represented the international team in the President's Cup as a player in 2009 in San Francisco. That was a U.S. victory, 19.5 to 14.5 at Harding Park. Camilo was added to the leadership roster in 2022 at Quail Hollow by Trevor Immelman and was tapped again in 2024 at Royal Montreal by Mike Weir. Fine player as well, a five-time winner on the PGA Tour, his last win coming in Bermuda 3 years ago, was also a winner of the 2008 Tour Championship and got to number 7 in the official World Golf Ranking. And Camilo Villegas, El Hombre Araña, joins us now. Congratulations on being named vice captain for a now third time, Camilo. It's been a tough run for the international team, though. Why is this a job that you're interested in taking on once again?
Oh, it's an honor for me. And yes, history has shown that the record's not on our side. It's pretty lofted toward the Americans, and that's why it's a challenge. And I love challenges. I mean, when you play professional golf and you have to compete out here, this is a constant challenge. You wake up every day trying to get better and trying to improve, and that's something we're trying to do with the international team. I wasn't part of Australia, but Ernie Els did a great job, and followed by Trevor Immelman and Mike Weir, and I feel like we keep getting a little bit better every year. I think we're in for this great battle. Medina is going to be a great venue, and being part of this team and the camaraderie and the energy around this week is extremely special. So once again, for me, it's an honor and it's a challenge. So we're trying to get the team in the best energy, the best preparation, and ready to compete. It's such a fun week, man. I mean, if people don't understand what happens with these guys, it's just so unique. We don't get to do it as often as the Americans do. They do it every year with Ryder Cup and President's Cup, and yeah, they seem to play with a lot of confidence against us. They lack a little bit of that when they play against a European team. Luke Donald is my great friend, and I'm trying to tap into his mind as often as I can and see how we can get better.
You work, Camilo, with Trevor Immelman, with Mike Weir, now with Jeff Ogilvie. Do you have a sense of what worked and perhaps what didn't work in your previous 10 years as an assistant captain and where you can add value this year?
Yes, absolutely. That's a great question, and that's what we try to do. After every year, we've sat down, put a little summary together, a little review, and see where we did good and where we made mistakes. We are trying to do things. How do I say? We're trying to evolve on those good things and bad things. It feels like we've tend to get a little bit emotional in the previous occasions for X and Y reason, and we're trying to put that a little bit aside. We're trying to prepare these players with trust and belief. One thing is saying, let's go win the cup. Another thing is putting our head on the pillow at night and believing that we can win the cup. So how we can get these guys to believe that? How can we get these guys to get up there and get united as a team and perform? At the end of the day, U.S. team is always stronger on paper, and but they are also stronger on paper when they play the Europeans. So again, honor and challenge. Those are the two words I can repeat about me being named as an assistant captain for the third time. It's a fun week. We will get those analysis we have done from the previous years. We'll try to communicate a little bit better with the players here and there, and we'll try to put all the stats and the numbers and the everything, because that's what it's become. It's become a complex thing, and there's a lot behind. So you got to put a lot on paper, aligned. But at the end of the day, the players have to believe they can win, and they got to go out there and perform.
Camilo, the numbers right now say that the international team is struggling, at least in terms of PGA Tour performance. Only Siwoo Kim and Hideki are inside the top 30 in the official world golf ranking. How do you get those players, the rest of the guys, to kind of pick up the pace over the spring and summer and maybe bring the competition a little closer together?
Yes, I'm going to say we have time and we don't have time at the same time, because time flies, and September will be around the corner. We've had similar situation in previous years, so we're not going to kind of overthink it. We'll get probably weekly or bi-weekly reports and stats and where guys can improve. We will communicate with the players. We'll try to make them feel as comfortable as possible in this whole process leading up to the tournament. And we'll have faith that the performance will be there leading into the tournament, and then when we tee it up in Medina in September.
Camilo, you've got a lot going on. You're a player director on the PGA Tour's board. Now you're an assistant captain in the President's Cup. You have a family. You're trying to play golf at the same time. Have you any concerns that it's going to be difficult for you to find some form as a player when you have so much going on around you?
Yeah, to be honest, yes. There's a lot going on, and it's been fun and challenging at the same time. I've had to learn how to really schedule better, be prepared, and prioritize. But being an assistant captain of the President's Cup, being a player director, being a little bit more involved with the game that has given me a life. I mean, the PGA Tour has given me a life, a really good one, and a great challenge for all these years. So once again, when I had a chance to run for a chairman of the pack, people were asking me, why are you doing it? And I said, you know, the game has given me a lot. It's my time to give back to the game. So my life has changed. My priorities have changed. But I'm good. I want to play good golf. It's been a little bit more challenging the last few years, but hey, I'm okay with it. I'll continue to grind. I'll continue to try to get better. I'll continue to add my two cents to this beautiful game of golf, and we'll see where this takes us.
Well, I'd love to get your two cents on the news of the day and yesterday, the PGA Tour announcing that the Hawaii Swing was coming to an end. You've played at Kapalua. You know that golf course well. Just your thoughts on kind of the changing landscape in terms of the PGA Tour schedule going forward.
Yeah, what a beautiful place. I had a chance to play Kapalua and play Sony many years, and we'll miss it. We'll miss it because it's great. But it's also great to see that Sony and Century want to continue to be involved with the game of golf. And there's been some tough decisions along the way, and this is one of them. But everything has been put on the table. We're trying to analyze what's the best thing for the PGA Tour, what's the best thing for the product, what's the best thing for our players, what's the best thing for our corporate partners. And along the way, there's going to be tough decisions. This was one of them, but I truly trust the process that we're going through. I truly trust Brian and his whole team and what they're bringing to the table and how we're just kind of approaching everything. And everybody will be okay. Trust me, I think the game of golf is in a good spot. We continue to work to make it better and better. And we just got to have faith that everything's going to be okay.
There's so much news last week as well, Camillo, about the potential future of LIV Golf. And I know one of the tough decisions you mentioned that Brian Rolat made was creating the returning member program, which got Brooks Koepka back to the PGA Tour, leaving aside the other guys who might actually be eligible for that in the future, with John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau and Cameron Smith. Do you think there's any sentiment among your fellow tour members for bringing back any of the other LIV players who wouldn't be eligible for that program?
Listen, I think everything is very early. I mean, obviously, very strong rumors came out last week, but we don't know what's going to happen there. We haven't got together as a group. I'm sure internally there's been a lot of discussions and things going on, and there will be a time where we have to make a decision. What's going to be the decision? I have no clue. Are we going to sit down and try and put everything on the table and try to make the best decision for our members, for our corporate partners, for everybody? I guarantee you that's what we're going to do, because that's what we've been doing. That's what we've been doing, how we're approaching every decision we make on the board. So I'm not worried. Again, the rumors are still rumors, and we have to kind of be proactive and be ready, but at the same time, let time tell us what's going to happen with them.
Well, questions like this are just a reminder of how much you do actually have on your plate these days. Camillo, thanks for the time today, and good luck at the Zurich this week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Stay with us, folks. The first women's major of the year gets underway this week in Houston. We'll take you out to the Chevron as preparations are underway. Plus, hear what the players are saying about this week's layout when Golf Today returns.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
The first major of the 2026 LPGA season gets underway Thursday with the Chevron Championship. Last year, a five-person playoff was needed to determine the winner. That was Mao Saigo of Japan. She birdied the first playoff hole to earn her breakthrough victory. And with that win, she became the fifth LPGA major champion from Japan.
Some notes on Memorial Park, located in Houston, opened in 1936, par 77,000. 475 yards, hosted the PGA Tour Houston Open currently, and renovated and redesigned by Tom Doak with consultation from a five-time major champ and Brooks Koepka back in 2019. Amy Rogers is reporting on site all week and joins us now from rainy Houston. Amy, what are you hearing about the golf course this week from the players?
Hey there, Damon. Well, it's a surprising move, the Chevron Championship moving here to Memorial Park Golf Course after just 3 years at the club at Carlton Woods. And I was here just last month. The PGA Tour's Texas Children's Houston Open also played here on this golf course. And I was told a few weeks ago that the footprint would be nearly the same. And I can tell you, being back here on site, that is the case. The grandstands, media center, a lot of the facilities exactly the same, but of course, a major change in signage. I also had been told that there would be a little bit of a reduced footprint, and I've seen that already as well. There were some stands behind the ninth green that have since been removed here from the property. Now, there will be two other notable changes once players can get out on the golf course. One of those that'll be the biggest changes from what the PGA Tour saw here just a month ago comes at the very first hole. That hole playing as a par four for the men at 507 yards. That hole will play as a par five at 533 yards for the women. Just one other change for the LPGA versus what the PGA Tour played, and that will be at the 14th. Again, that's a par four for the men at 507. That was a par four at 505. That will be a par five at 529 yards for the women. So overall, the course here at Memorial Park playing about 660 yards shorter for the women than what we saw here just a month ago for the PGA Tour. Now, I asked several players who were teeing it up last week in LA, including major champions Brooke Henderson and Hannah Green, what they knew about this golf course, how familiar they were with the course. They didn't know much about it, and we're getting out here, just getting to see the course for the very first time here this week. And here's what some of the players had to say who were able to get out here and get a look at the golf course earlier today.
I think it'll be really good for the tournament. Even though I really like the Woodlands area, I hope that being closer to the city will attract more people to come and watch us. The Houston Open has obviously been played here. I have seen that the crowds can get big, so I hope that people come out and watch us. But it's playing tough. It's playing quite long. Obviously, this rain is not really helping either, making things a little bit more difficult for us. But I think it definitely feels like a major championship course, at least on the last nine holes that I played. I hope that the fairways can at least firm up. I don't know if that will happen, but it'll be interesting to see how they kind of put the tee positions, because some of the holes, yeah, depending on pin locations, could be quite tough.
I did my best to try and practice early this morning before the pro-am, before the rain, so I was able to see the front nine this morning. I think it's great. It's really cool because you can see, you know, some of the divots on a lot of the tee boxes where the men were. And to be honest, we're teeing off at a lot of similar spots to where the guys are playing, so it's playing pretty long. In my opinion, I feel like, I mean, it's going to depend on the conditions, but the greens are really big. I think the winner this week is going to have to putt well and hit really good approach shots into the greens. So that's just kind of what I've been working on. Also going to be hitting a lot of long irons for me. Like a lot of the par fours, I didn't hit anything less than basically a 7-iron for a lot of the holes, so it's going to be playing really long.
I played 9 holes yesterday. I really like the golf course. I like the length of the golf course. I like how you're hitting a lot more longer iron shots into the greens. I find that super fun because I play like that length at home with my friends, so it doesn't feel too drastic, but it's nice to not be coming in with a wedge every time.
I already played 18 holes on Sunday 9 and yesterday 9. I think it's totally different than Woodland for sure. I mean, like, Woodland seemed like, you know, a big, huge tree down, you know, downside of the fairway. But here it's just like huge, wide open on eye size. But obviously the greens were tougher than last year for sure. I mean, like, it seemed big, but it's, you know, it's run off from the green in every part of the green. And then I think it should be like challenged up and down.
Well, cutting into some of today's preparations is the weather. You heard Green mention there. Players were called off the golf course here at 10:50 local time due to severe weather in the area, and they have not been sent back out since. So we're expecting nearly half an inch of rain here in the Houston area today. And unfortunately, that forecast continues into Wednesday as well, with more rain and thunderstorms in the forecast. But thankfully, much clearer conditions expected for the 4 days of this championship. But certainly throws a wrinkle into players' preparations and planning. As Allison Lee mentioned to me, the golf course is likely going to play completely different once this tournament gets started. And so many of these players still just trying to get to know this golf course for the very first time. Guys.
All right. Amy Rogers reporting from rainy Houston. New golf course this year. Same issues that we've seen the last few in Houston. And I understand the move to Houston and Chevron with the hundreds of thousands of employees and the sponsorship opportunities, but my goodness, we're this time of year clearly problematic compared to what we would see every year. The California desert and the blue skies and La Quinta and the mountains there, and a couple hours east of Los Angeles, just the, you know, rinse and repeat sunny skies. It's a tough look out of the control of the LPGA, but as someone who follows professional golf quite closely, this is something that I'm noticing, and I've noticed it at Carlton Woods, and I'm noticing it so far here at Memorial Park.
Yeah, but if this was a women's major being played on a links course in the British Isles, we'd be sitting here saying, yeah, bring it on. Let's get more of this kind of Scottish weather in here. There are many things we can blame the LPGA and its Commissioner Craig Kesler for, but the weather in Houston, probably not one of those right now. And yeah, I mean, it was great to play in the dome in the California desert. But it also took weather out as a variable in the tournament every year, which I actually think is one of the more interesting aspects of an outdoor sport, is that the weather ought to be part of it. And the reality is that the LPGA Tour no longer has the luxury of choosing it based on weather. They're choosing their venues based on where they can actually find sponsors, where they can find commercial traction. And it's just not a luxury to stay somewhere where there was not going to be the commercial support that Chevron was going to offer to move this to Texas. And that's the reality. And this is a trade-off that I think had to be made.
I'm being a bit of a whiny Californian. I get that. I'm being a little homesick.
You just want to be able to drive to it from LA?
Yeah, that too. But hopefully the golf course gets the drought a little bit. You heard the players saying that the golf course probably won't play the way they hoped it would don't want to see a slog. I want to see the best players in the world be able to perform on this major championship stage.
Certainly, and I hope it's not tipped out to the distance that we saw in the, in the PGA Tour event, or even what it actually could be maxed out at, because I think that actually takes away some of the excitement as well when the clubs have to get longer and longer to go into these holes. But hopefully we're going to actually see a good tournament this week. Well, the world number one, Gino Thitikon, she's still in search of her first major title this week. And will this actually be the week? She joins us from Houston, coming up next. We're back in golf today, and let's take a look at the current standings in the race to the CME Globe. Nelly Korda at the top of that list, thanks to a win and 3 second-place finishes this year. Two of those came to Hyojoo Kim, who's second on this list. Most recent champion Hannah Green in third place, and there at fourth, the world number one, Gino Thitikon.
And it was Gino who won the CME Group Tour Championship in November at Tiburon for the second straight year. World number one took home the $4 million first place prize, the largest in women's golf. How's she doing this year? 6 starts. She's put together a couple of top 10 finishes, including a win in February, native Thailand. And after the win, she said, "I know it's not as big as the majors, but winning in my home country means so much to me, sometimes even more than a major." Of course, Gino's still looking for her first major. She's been close, 9 top 10s, 5 top 5s, finished runner-up to Grace Kim at the Evian last year, and has also been close at the Chevron. And the world number one joins us now. Gino, nice to spend some time with you. I'm curious, this is a new golf course for you and your peers this week. What's the process for you in learning how to play a golf course that you've never seen before?
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally different than Woodland last year. I already play all 18 holes there. I think the point for this week is just keep your ball on the green. I mean, around the green, it's kind of tough, like, going with up and down. So I think if you put your ball in the safest place here, you should be good for all the week.
You know, do you feel pressure to win a major championship? You are only 23 years old, but you've won 8 times. You're number one in the world. It's something people expect from you. Do you feel that they expect that from you?
I think they always going to be expectation out there, even like from myself, from my team, or even from all the people, like all the fans that, you know, keep an eye on me. Honestly, I don't think that's like put me a pressure that much. I mean, what I accomplish is it's more than I can ask for. And then I will put major as my goal in every year. I mean, if I can make it as fast as possible, it should be the world. But if not, I think I have done a really good job, but like so far.
Well, I know one of your goals was to win the Honda LPGA Thailand. You did that in your native country. Your family was there. Your mom was there. What was that moment like for you, celebrating with so many family and friends in attendance?
It's just like a tears of joy. And I mean, like I said, at Honda, my mom's and my grandfather, they all went out. Like starting since I was a pro, they're always home, and then, you know, they don't have a chance to be able to watch me play that much. So Honda is the only one chance that like they can watch me play in the real person, and then I play in front of them too. I mean, also the Thai fans were amazing. It would mean the world to me to want that one. I never think that I can want that one. As fast as like this, but obviously it's really tears of joy when I hug my mom and my grandfather.
How does your form feel coming into this week, Gino? Because a lot of the top players in the world are all playing well. You've won, Nelly Korda has won, Hyojoo Kim has won, Hannah Green has won 4 times. There's a lot of great players playing great golf.
I know. I think the level of the competition always higher and higher. I mean, like, we play with the new faces this year. I mean, like, I saw the new faces from LAT, from some of the Asian tour. I think we go stronger, and then
To me, I think it's just a good sign for an LPGA to represent these players. And then I think I gain confidence more right now with my coach. I mean, he just flew from Thailand to here. Like, he with me in the last 2 weeks in Dallas. And then we're working on things that I need to figure it out sometime. Because I feel like the last three events that I play, I'm not that confident with irons. I still need a feelings of, you know, hitting irons more and more. But right now, I think I gain more confidence there.
You've got some buddies out there on the PGA Tour like Tom Kim. Might you call one of your pals on the PGA Tour for a little advice on the golf course, maybe a little secret information that none of your LPGA competitors might know?
Yeah, I mean, me and Tom is pretty close, but we're not really talking to golf that much. I mean, like, I didn't ask him about the courses at all. I didn't ask him about golf related at all. So I think maybe it's a golfer rules that we not talk golf in the, you know, on the table.
Well, everyone should be calling you. You are, in fact, the best player in the world. Gino, great to spend some time with you. Best of luck this week as you chase major number one in Houston. Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's where you can watch coverage of the Chevron Championship starting Thursday and Friday at 11 a.m., resuming at 6 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, we begin at 1 p.m. on NBC, moving to Golf Channel at 3 p.m., and then on Peacock at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, moving to the final round at 2 p.m. on NBC.
We're back on Golf Today and take you back to the end of the Florida Swing. Clutch birdie on the 72nd hole led Matt Fitzpatrick to a one-shot win at the Valspar for his third career title on the PGA Tour and his first on tour since the 2023 RBC Heritage. Got the Paintbrush Trophy. Then the following week, Matt's younger brother Alex became a winner for the first time on the DP World Tour, winning the Hero Indian Open. Final round 69 gave him a two-shot win. And this Fitzpatrick family just keeps on rolling. If you've been paying attention, Sunday, big brother Matt back at it, taking down the world number one Scottie Scheffler in a playoff to win the RBC for the second time. Matty Fitz, now a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, up to number three in the official world golf ranking. It will be a brother act in New Orleans. Some notable teams, Matt and Alex together, Brooks Koepka and Shane Lowry together, Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak pictured here, defending champs, and Blades Brown and Luke Clanton, a couple young stallions together. So Brently Romine joins us once again with more on some of these teams. Brently.
Yeah, Damon, you mentioned the highlights there for the brothers Fitzpatrick. It's been a great year for the Fitzpatricks off the golf course as well. Matt's wife, Catherine, expecting their first child later this year. But more on Alex. You know, he could get his PGA Tour card with a win here this week at the Zurich Classic, that two-year winner's exemption goes to the champion. But he's been very stout on the DP World Tour. Aside from that win, he's been top 25 in six of seven starts. He's seventh currently in the race to Dubai. Obviously, the top 10 at the end of the year get their PGA Tour cards. And you mentioned the Shane Lowry, Brooks Koepka pairing. Brooks is Shane's fourth different partner. Shane obviously played the last 2 years with partner Rory McIlroy. And Koepka has been trending since returning to the PGA Tour earlier this season, was just T12 at Augusta National for the Masters. And on a golf course here in TPC Louisiana that has seemed to identify some of the best putters in the game, we'll see what Brooks Koepka can do with the flat stick, which hasn't been his best friend so far this year, continues to search with that, although has shown signs. And then one last thing on the Zurich Classic, traditionally has been a proving ground for President's Cup hopefuls. The international team especially has annually done dinners on Bourbon Street just to try to familiarize themselves with guys who could be on that team. And two players in this field, both captains this year, Brent Snedeker on the U.S. side, Jeff Ogilvie internationally. However, They're playing with two guys in Cam Davis with Ogilvy and Keith Mitchell with Snedeker, who are both outside the top 40 in points. So both those players with a lot of work to do if they want to be at Medina later this year. But one other guy internationally to keep an eye on. First off, Casey Jarvis, he's the top-ranked international in points at 12th. But a guy I have my eye on is Sudarshan Yellamiraju from Canada. He's currently 25th in international President's Cup points. He actually wasn't in this field up until recently. He's pairing with Ryan Gerard. But Gerard's initial partner, David Ford, withdrew with injury. Gerard then reached out to the PGA Tour, said, what are my options? They sent him a list of almost 600 guys with some sort of PGA Tour status. Eamon, I don't know if Brandel Chamblee was on that list, but Smiley Kaufman, our colleague, was. I don't know if that invite was necessarily serious or not, but Gerard did text Smiley but before ultimately deciding on Sudarshan. Sudarshan, a great young player, just got through up the Korn Ferry Tour last year. Self-taught, learned the game with his dad growing up in Canada by watching YouTube videos. Certainly a everyman player who we can root for, and you know, maybe he'll have a good week and impress Captain Ogilvy in the process.
Always fun to see how these teams come together. Brentley Romine reporting from the Zurich Classic of New Orleans.
We could actually see a Brandel Chamblee start on the PGA Tour one of these days, I guess. Stacey Lewis, now she won 13 times out on the LPGA Tour. Two of those were majors, one of which came at the Old Course. The other was the Chevron Championship back in the California desert. She's still making news during the week of a major. More with Stacey coming up next.
Back on Golf Today, taking you back to 2011 Chevron Championship Mission Hill. Stacey Lewis beat Yanni Sen by 3 to earn her first career major. Yanni famously touched the trophy on the tee, but Stacey took her down. And had, of course, the famous leap into Poppy's Pond to boot. And the white bathrobe as well. Then in September, you may recall, she announced she'd be retiring after a 17-year career at the LPGA's Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. But due to the weather forcing a cancellation, this week's Chevron Championship will give her a proper chance to say goodbye after an incredible career, as you see. And how about this for some exciting news? Stacey's set to become a mom of two. She and her husband are expecting their second child in the fall. Stacey joins us now from Houston. Wonderful to see you, two-time major champ. Why does this event feel like the place to say goodbye after all that tough weather in Arkansas?
I actually played my last event last year in Hawaii, and it was just me and my daughter there, so didn't really get a proper send-off for my family. But, I grew up in the Houston area playing golf all over this city, and just to get to play in front of my family one more time and get my friends out. And then also this tournament was where I got my first win, so it just felt like a good place and a good time for it.
How quickly did your mind turn to what was going to be an appropriate venue to say goodbye, Stacey, after the disappointment of the weather down in Arkansas?
I wanted to play out the end of last year. I felt like to my sponsors and to everyone else, I committed to the year. And so I played the year out, and I was hoping to play a few more tournaments in Florida there to end the year. And this tournament just means a lot to me personally, and I wanted to see it be successful and wanted to help with the transition to get us here and to get us started on the right foot. And so just felt right. And, having the last few months off, I am definitely ready to retire after this week.
Well, you're one of the toughest players to ever hold 14 clubs. You overcome a lot from back issues young. Now you're expecting your second child. Like how are you feeling physically? Do you call an Amy Olsen, a Lindsey Weaver Wright for maybe advice on playing while pregnant?
I was almost 6 months with my other one when I stopped playing. So I do know how to play golf pregnant, and you actually play pretty well. Just your body's a lot looser, and my golf swing gets flatter. So I'm not too worried about the whole playing thing. If this had been a month further along, we might have had issues, but I'm looking forward to it. And, just to get to play on tour with both daughters in the belly is pretty special.
You were actually the last mother to win out there on the LPGA Tour, Stacey. How difficult is it to juggle being a mom and a career out there? And has it gotten any easier over the years?
People have no idea. I don't remember what life was like before. And you're just constantly on the go. You're constantly, you know, you're worried about your golf when you're on site. But then as soon as you leave the golf course, it's what do they need? What do the kids need? What do I need to do to be ready for the next day? What are we going to do for dinner? You know, there's so many things that go into it that people have no idea. You know, I've had several players that just had kids, you know, say, I don't know how you did this for so long. So, you know, it's one of those things until you experience it, you don't truly know. But it's probably one of the most difficult things I've done in my life.
And you talked about that with Beth Ann Nichols, colleague of Golf Week magazine columnist Eamon Lynch, about the struggles that women face trying to get pregnant, fertility. Do you think that the LPGA should kind of protect the players and their ranking, similar to tennis, when you are pregnant or going through fertility, which can be very difficult on the body?
Yeah, I think, you know, just the way our careers go, a lot of players are going to play golf in their 20s and then, you know, maybe potentially be done and want to have kids. But, you know, for a lot of people, it's too late. And I just would like to see more awareness about it at the tour level to just, you know, make the players aware of it and make them think about it. But tennis is doing a great job of protecting their athletes, you know, while they go through egg retrievals and those type of things, and protecting their status and even paying them in that time off. So, you know, we've done a good job with our maternity policy, but I think it's something else that we can, you know, be more proactive on and help prolong people's careers.
We had Julie Ingster on the show yesterday, Stacey, who had her daughters in her 30s, competed well into her 40s. In fact, she was out there on tour last year, almost made a cut at the age of 65. Yeah. I'm curious, is this really goodbye for you? Is there any chance that we'll see you at some point in the future when the kids are older and you think, yeah, maybe I'll give it one more go?
There might be some potential in the future. It's definitely not going to be a consistent thing. I could definitely see myself playing some senior golf here in a few years, and when my daughters are a little bit older and able to. But you know, I've traveled the world for the last 20 years, and I'm ready to kind of be at home a little bit more and learn what that feels like, and to raise a daughter at home instead of in hotel rooms. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of years.
Well, I read you did a pretty cool gender reveal involving your oldest daughter, Chesney. What'd you have her do?
Yep. I surprised her after school. We, after school, picked her up, and we told her that she was going to be a big sister. And then we had one of those exploding golf balls. And so she's been asking for a baby sister for a very long time. And so we're very glad that the golf ball was pink when it exploded, because we might have had some tears if it was blue.
What's a good week for you at this point, Stacey? I know you have obviously much greater priorities, so much more going on in your life, but by the time you get to the end of this week, mm-hmm. what will you use to assess? What's the metric mm-hmm. for a good week?
I would love to make the cut. I'd love to play 4 days. That would be ideal for me, but you know, I'm gonna have my husband on the bag, and really just, I'm gonna do my best to enjoy the week. You know, I'm competitive. I want to play well, and for me, it's just trying my best to enjoy the week and not put so much pressure on myself on the outcome, on the scorecard. And but I would love to play 4 days. I think that would be a pretty good week for me.
We're back on Golf Today. This week in golf, some good stuff to watch. Volvo China Open on the DP World Tour. Chevron Championship, first major for the LPGA. Zurich Classic of New Orleans team event down on the bayou. And then the Mitsubishi Electric Classic on the 50 and over set. That begins on Friday. And got some news today. Colleague Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week magazine saying Chevron just announced a $1 million increase to the purse, taking it to $9 million. So the LPGA majors by purse, $9 million for Chevron, $12 million for the U.S. Women's Open and the KPMG. Then you got $8 million for the Amundi Evian and $9.75 million for the AIG Women's British Open. So more momentum for the LPGA.
And it's really striking when you look at those numbers and then you look back at what it was. The Chevron 5 years ago was 3.1 million. Yeah. The PGA and the Women's Open, the PGA and the Evian were 4.5. The US Women's Open was 5.5. The British was less than 6. The actual total changes in those five purses has gone from $23.4 million in 2021 to $50.75 million. Great to see more of that also in the week-to-week product. And we saw some of that last week with Walter Wang putting in $1 million into the purse out in Los Angeles mid-tournament.
And CME Group Tour Championship winner gets $4 million. Gino's won it twice.
Pretty good change.
And maybe the first major for her comes this week. Thanks for joining us, Golf Central, at 4. We will see you tomorrow.